Live Creative Now, episode 74.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, which is a lie, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. My last episode, episode 73, was sort of a diary entry of all the things I've been up to related to writing, publishing, and launching my forthcoming book with the working title of The Creative Sandbox Way. Now that title may well change. That's the working title, what we're going with right now. And that book will be appearing at an Amazon near you on November 15th, which is just 2 months from now. So I have just 2 months to finish the manuscript, get the entire book laid out, illustrated, designed, all of that, cover design, promote, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And my commitment when I set the goal of getting this book published and launched during my 50th birthday month, I was born in November, I'm turning 50 in November, and I am bound and determined to get this book published during the month of November this year. And when I set that goal, my goal was to spend at least 2 hours a day on the book. And until this past Sunday, I was accomplishing more than that. Some days I've been putting in 4 hours or more, and I've always put in at least 2 hours until Sunday, when my husband and I flew down to San Diego for a night. And I did do a little bit of doodling, illustrations which will end up in the book, but that's pretty much all I was able to do. So I am just itching to dive back in. But today is Tuesday, and I've got a podcast to get out tomorrow. It's Wednesday, if you're listening to this on the day that the podcast goes live. And I have a performance tonight. I am in a couple of different improv performance groups, and one of my groups is in the San Francisco Fringe Festival, and we have a show tonight. So I have a half an hour to get this podcast out. So anyway, over this past week, I have worked on illustrations for the book, both creating them by hand in calligraphy and also abstract doodles or drawings, and also scanning what I've created by hand and getting it ready to print in Photoshop and Illustrator. And in the process of getting my artwork ready to print, I realized that my calligraphy, if I turn it into outlines, it works really well as coloring pages. And since I already planned to incorporate coloring pages in this book, I'm super excited because now I'm going to have all of the quotes that I'm rendering in calligraphy are going to be colorable, which is pretty cool. Meanwhile, I have also done so much research. I spent a lot of time online researching the various different printing options and book launch strategy. In case you're interested, which you may or may not be, I'm going to go with CreateSpace for all Amazon sales of the print book, but I'm also going to upload the final file to Ingram Spark for extended distribution, because if I do end up selling any books through bookstores or to libraries, I will make a lot more profit, something like 4 times as much or something, by doing my extended distribution through Ingram Spark rather than just using CreateSpace. So a little tip for anybody who happens to also be publishing a print book. Meanwhile, I also gave my launch team, my team of ambassadors who are helping me to promote the book and who are going to get a free advanced review PDF and will be writing Amazon reviews for me, I gave them their first mission, which was to share their favorite podcasts and blogs, if they have any that they follow, to put those in a spreadsheet that I put together, and to contact the hosts about the book and about me in the hopes that perhaps that will drum up some podcast interviews, blog post interviews, things like that. So if you're interested in being on that launch team, I'm still accepting applications. You can go to melissadinwiddie.com/launch team, all one word. melissadinwiddie.com/launch team to get to the application. Meanwhile, I also did a ton more writing and editing, and the manuscript is not completely done yet. I still have a few loose ends that I need to tie up in the manuscript, but it's getting really close to being done, and I'm feeling really good about it. And tomorrow, as I'm recording this today, if you're listening on the publication day for the podcast, I have my very first meeting with my editor, Brenda, and I cannot wait to get her feedback. So cross your fingers that that goes well and that she has useful, helpful feedback to give me. That's what I've been up to on the book. So now I want to get on with the core of today's episode and a little background on that. Before I started this podcast, Live Creative Now, for about a year, it was 2014 into 2015, I think it was, I co-hosted a podcast with Corey Huff of The Abundant Artist. He's also the author of How to Sell Your Art Online, I think is the title of the book that he wrote. That podcast that we hosted together was called Creative Insurgents. And you can still find all the episodes that we published archived on Corey's site. And I have a link in the show notes if you want to find those episodes. Unlike Live Creative Now, Creative Insurgents was 100% an interview podcast. So every time we published an episode, we brought one or more people on to talk to interview. And some of those conversations are just such gems, and they really deserve to reach a wider audience. So with Corey's blessing and encouragement, in fact, I am going to be republishing them here from time to time. And full confession, today and for the next couple of months, republishing Creative Insurgents episode serves a double purpose because, first of all, it exposes those conversations to new listeners. And at the same time, it also liberates some of my time to keep working on my book, which is great because launch day is like 61 days away. My God. So I can use all the help I can get. Anyway, in this episode, which is Creative Insurgents number 11, Corey and I speak with poet and creative coach Mark McGinnis, who is the author of the books Motivation for Creative People, How to Stay Creative While Gaining Money, Fame, and Reputation, and he's also the author of Resilience, Facing Down Rejection and Criticism on the Road to Success. Now, we recorded this episode back in the spring of 2014. So there's some time-specific info in there that you'll hear that's not relevant anymore. So if you happen to go to a URL that was, you know, appropriate at the time that we recorded it and you find something different, I apologize, but you're getting basically a museum piece from 2014, a couple of years ago. Anyway, Mark is super inspiring and he has a lot of brilliance to share. So enjoy this conversation with Mark McGinnis.
So Melissa, why don't you introduce today's guest?
Yeah, I am so excited to have Mark McGinnis with us today. Mark is a poet, and he makes his living, since poetry is usually not such a profitable career, he makes his living as a coach for artists and creatives and entrepreneurs, and he runs a blog called Lateral Action, which offers tips and techniques to help you focus on doing your remarkable things rather than spending all your time getting trivial things done and never moving beyond creative thinking, right? We want to be in creative action.
And the real reason that I wanted to bring Mark on the show today and was so excited is that he's also the author of a wonderful book that I highly, highly recommend called Resilience: Facing Down Rejection and Criticism on the Road to Success. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm just so delighted to get another chance to talk with you.
Well, thank you, Melissa and Corey. It's, you know, we've been hanging out online for goodness knows how long now. So it's nice to, you know, get around the campfire with you.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of like our modern campfire here on Google Hangouts.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I have to jump in and fanboy for a second. Mark, I've been reading, your blog was one of the very first blogs that I started reading like 7 years ago.
Oh no, you weren't reading then.
And it's amazing to see, like, you know, the way that your business has grown and the things you've done. And, I'm a big fan. I'll just say that. So I'm really excited to have you. I pretty much just started a podcast so that I could get all of my favorite people in a room. So this is quite the moment for me.
Thank you, Corey. That's very nice of you to say so.
So, Mark, you write on your blog, you have this great little formula: creativity plus productivity equals success. And yet so many creatives get mired in resistance, right? And one of my sayings is that if you want to be prolific, which of course we all do, right? The simple formula is imperfectionism plus effort plus time equals prolificness. And I'm curious, since I know that you write so much about creativity and productivity, what are some of your go-to tips for charging up both creativity and productivity?
Well, really, I mean, for me, I would put creativity and productivity together. You know, it's creating, actually producing. Creating is producing something, but not just productivity as in the usual productivity cranking widget industry, because none of us here and listening to this are in the business of cranking widgets. We want to create something amazing. So for me, if you really want to be creative and productive in the best sense, then it's about, number one, do something that you really are passionate about. And probably that will scare you a bit too. That's usually a good litmus test. You're really excited and also a bit scared. It keeps you awake at night thinking, can I really do this? Number two, dedicate time to it. You know, even if it's only half an hour a day, or, you know, depending on your work schedule, sorry, I can't say schedule. you just say an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours, whatever it is, say that is the time I'm going to do this. Because number three, you've got to expect resistance. And I find that if you say, so this is my writing time or my painting time or whatever it is, and then the time comes, there will be temptations to do other things. But if you've said, okay, this is the time, then you know you're either doing it or you're making excuses not to do it. It takes away a whole level of decision making. And, you know, paradoxically, the more you accept, okay, oh, all right, this is resistance, that urge to go on Facebook again, that urge to check email again, to make another cup of tea or coffee or whatever it is, you just think, oh, that's resistance. That's what it is. So I just need to ignore it and open up the document or get the guitar out or whatever it is and just get going.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And to your first point of the three, I think so many people suffer under the illusion, I know I did for so many years, that if it's hard and I'm feeling that resistance and I can't seem to get myself to do it, that's a stop sign, that means I should quit. And in fact, I now know that is a hallmark, that fear, that I don't think I'm ready, that I just don't think I can do this, whatever. That's a hallmark that's my calling. That's exactly what I need to be doing. And really the most important thing any of us can do in order to achieve our goals, success in anything, is to get comfortable with discomfort, because there's always going to be that discomfort. We're always going to be pushing up against some kind of resistance when we're endeavoring to do something that's important to us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. which is the kind of the mirror image of the uncomfortable comfort zone, as my friend Kathleen calls it.
That's great.
When you're not doing what you know you really want to be doing.
Yes.
You know, you're on Facebook instead, or you're on the sofa instead, or doing any number of other things that may look worthy or productive or not, but it's not what you want to do in your heart of hearts.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a great point. Well, I know one of the things that also gets in people's way really big time is fear of rejection, fear of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you want to create original work and you want to put it out in the world, you're going to have to learn how to deal with it, because the more you put yourself out there, the more you're going to be getting feedback, both positive and negative, right? And you have yeah. this fantastic book that you've written, and you have this great introduction to your book about how you came to write it. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share that.
Sure, because it was the last thing I was thinking of writing. So one of the things on my website is a free course for creative professionals. It's kind of creative career guide called the Creative Pathfinder. And you sign up and you get a lesson a week. It was supposed to be for 25 weeks. And it covers creativity, productivity, networking, marketing, managing money, all the kind of basic stuff that we have to do. And towards the end, I thought, oh, I guess I should say something about rejection and criticism. So I thought, will I make that a bonus lesson? I thought, no, I'll just put it in. You know, it's 26 weeks, which is a kind of a bit of an odd number. And at the end of the course, I asked people to vote which was the most valuable lesson for you. And by a country mile was the one about rejection and criticism, which was the last one that I just put it in almost as an afterthought. And I was getting emails from people saying, you know, you could write a book about this. And I thought, you know what, maybe I could write a book about this. So I don't always write stuff that comes from the audience, but in this case it was loud and clear, and also because it made me realize what you said earlier on, which is, yeah, we all have to deal with rejection and criticism. You know, if you're going to put your work out there into the world, you can't control how the world responds to it. And it just made me realize, I've been coaching for years and years, and in just about every client I've worked with, rejection and or criticism have come up. So I realized, I've been solving this problem for years without ever really treating it as a separate issue. And it, you know, I had a look and it seemed nobody had really written a book about, I mean, there's books on romantic rejection and dealing with criticism in the workplace, but I couldn't see anything, particularly for creatives, about rejection and criticism together. So I thought, hey, we need to tackle this.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Oh my gosh. So like the whole idea of rejection and criticism, right? Like it, even just thinking about it, I get emotional about it. Like I can feel my heart racing, and I can feel myself like my breathing is getting heavier. You know, as an actor, I face far more rejection than I do acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I walk into an audition room and the odds are that I'm not going to get the part. Like that, you know, like I think my ratio is like one out of every 7 or 8 auditions, I get a callback.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good ratio, but it's yeah. tough to go through it.
Yeah. You know, I'm a professional now, and I sort of pick and choose the auditions that I go to, but even being choosy about it, you know, and trying to only audition for parts that I know are right for me, it's still tough. You know, there was, just a few months ago, there was a part that is one of those lifetime roles. Like I desperately, desperately want to do this, and I'm quickly becoming too old to do it. And, you know, I was one of the final actors called in for it, and I didn't get it. And it's tough to pick yourself up off the floor and keep going. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have to, right? Like you have to. It's just part of the creative process.
So Mark, what would you suggest to somebody like in Corey's position who has to deal with rejection as part of their creative work? over and over and over and over again. And if Corey's not able to manage that, there's no way he can be an actor, because you have to audition and you have to be, you're going to be rejected.
Yeah. Well, Corey's already doing the number one thing, which is just keep putting yourself out there. Because even if you do nothing else, just the fact that you experience it multiple times, you should at least get used to it and realize, okay, it might feel like life and death, but it isn't actually. And you realize it's more of an occupational hazard than anything else.
Accept the pain and it can no longer hurt you.
Right. Or that's something. It. And also, no, but I actually think this is true, because how many times do we hear from people, usually who are not artists or actors or poets or whatever themselves, saying, don't take it so personally. Mm-hmm. and yeah, I mean, how easy is it to follow that? Because as Corey's just shown us, even we do take it personally, because we put our heart and soul into it. It isn't just, I found a really nice quote from the novelist Gustave Flaubert. He said, we take a length of gut from our bellies and serve it up. Mm-hmm. So then the bourgeoisie get their knives out. Of course it hurts. And so I think it's, you know, and I see people go, oh, well, I shouldn't take it so seriously. It's silly, whatever. Well, of course you should. I mean, you put everything into it. It's going to hurt. And without being too, drill sergeant-ish about it, it should hurt. Because if it doesn't hurt, then you're just phoning it in. You're not putting your heart and soul into it anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the paradox is, as Corey said, you know, if you accept the pain, it will sting, but it won't sting quite as much.
Yeah. Well, regarding criticism, one of the things that I have learned over the years is that, have you ever noticed that when somebody lobs a criticism bomb at you, sometimes it hurts like hell, right? And sometimes it's like, whatever, whatever they're saying, it's like, okay. For example, okay, so this is sort of a silly example, but when I remember you know how kids can be so mean in labeling other kids and giving them nicknames that are nasty, right? Well, my last name, Dinwiddie, some boys decided they wanted to make fun of me, and so they tried out calling me Dumbwiddie. There's no M in my last name, but you know, Dinwiddie, Dimwiddie, Dim, or Dim. First they said, you're a dimwit, you're a dumbwit. Well, it didn't bother me because I always did really well in school. So that, you know, Melissa's a dummy, Melissa's dimwitted or whatever. It was annoying, but it didn't like rip me apart, because I didn't have a trigger point there. Boy, you know, if somebody says something that touches on an area that I feel really insecure about, you know, that's it. Watch out. I'm flattened for days. And just knowing that, and knowing that if you're hit by a criticism and it flattens you, it must be touching on a trigger point, you know, it pushing your big red button, right? So there's something there that you fear is true about yourself, that when somebody throws that criticism at you, it just hooks right into that. And just knowing that has helped me be able to detach myself from getting hooked like that.
Well, also, it's a really good clue to what the unconscious thinking is that's behind that. You know, if you're saying on some level, I fear this about myself, and then, you know, if that some level may be fairly far down until it gets brought to the surface by, you know, some kind of criticism. Well, yeah, it's not nice, but it's also an opportunity to say, so, whoa, I didn't realize I was thinking that. Is that really true? And you can kind of get the hood up on it and examine it and maybe say, well, okay, time to throw away that assumption or that idea.
Exactly. So in that way, what can be so cool about criticism, like who wants to be criticized, right? Nobody likes that. But it can actually be a really powerful tool for self-growth and, you know, expanding beyond our limitations for
potentially,
ourselves.
Potentially. It's always easier to see that in other people.
Yes, definitely. Definitely true. Well, I know you mentioned before about the importance of making the time, and that I've discovered as well I spent probably about a decade saying to myself, oh gosh, I wish I had time to make my art. I wish I had time to make my art instead of always being stuck making art for clients. And it wasn't until years later that I finally realized, oh, it's not a matter of having the time. It's a matter of making the time. So you write about that in a book that you also contributed to, Manage Your Day to Day, Build Your Routine, Find Your Focus, and Sharpen Your Creative Mind. And you write about the single most important change that you can make in your working habits, which is to switch to your creative work first and what you call your reactive work second. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, I mean, years ago, I used to think, well, I get up in the morning and I'm going to get on with, usually for me, it's a piece of writing. And I would be really excited. And then I'd think, well, okay, but before I get down to work, I better just clear the desk. Just check email. And if there's anything needs attending to there, I'll deal with that. And then I'll return the phone calls. And I'll just go through the to-do list, the things that from yesterday's meeting. And it gets to 5 o'clock. And I've done everything but the one piece that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I realized this was not getting me anywhere. I was just on the hamster wheel. It was just... Anyone could ring up at any point, and I would go, oh, right, yeah, okay, let me get on to that. Or an email could come in, and that would be another half hour gone.
Yeah.
And so what I decided to do, and it was really uncomfortable at first, was say, so first thing in the morning, I'm going to do what I think is the biggest priority. I'm going to sit down and do the writing, email off, Twitter off. Well, I don't think there even was Twitter in those days, but whatever it was turned off. I wasn't answering the phone. It was going to answer phone. And it was really uncomfortable because there was always that feeling that somebody somewhere was wanting me to get back to them about what they thought mm-hmm. was the biggest priority. And you just have to go through that wall of anxiety, I think, and say, no, I'm going to do this today. And actually that was the start of me really starting to move forward on my writing and producing stuff that I was pleased with, that I was putting up on the web initially, now publishing in print as well. And it was all the writing the blog, the making the Pathfinder lessons, writing my books. These are all the things that I'm most proud of in terms of, creating content for the business. But they're also things that have added the most value to my business. They bring me, stuff that I wrote years ago brings me new clients. And yet it's all the stuff that nobody was there. And people are always impressed once you've done it. They say, oh, isn't it great? You wrote a book. I'm like, where were you when I was trying to write it? And I was, but of course, you have to do it on your own, But I would say if anybody's listening to this and thinking, oh, but I just don't have the time, just think, well, if you make the time.
Yeah.
Even 5-10 minutes a day on your commute in the notebook on the back of another commuter's back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Something. You can find something. And it was really brought home to me. I was listening to the Poetry Foundation's podcast a few months ago, and they had an American poet was there talking about Gwendolyn Brooks, the great poet from the mid-20th century. And Brooks was her mentor, and she went to see Brooks one day, and Brooks said, so, how's your writing going? And I should remember the poet's name. I can't remember her name, but she was looking for sympathy. She was going, well, how hard it is with work and family and studies. And she was looking for the, oh, poor you. And Brooks looked at her and said, you shouldn't have time for anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite hardcore. But then you look at what she achieved, and it's,
that's what it takes.
It's quite remarkable. Now, I probably wouldn't go that far myself. I mean, I might put the kids, notch higher on. But actually, it really does challenge you to think, well, what are you making time for?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are your real priorities, in other words? Do you really want this, or do you just kind of say you want to do it as a hobby and it would be nice to have done it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like to say my motto is the thing I do first is the thing that gets done.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
We all have the same amount of time every day. And it's not like, the people who do amazing things with their life, they have the same amount of time in their day as we do. Like, we all get 24 hours a day. We all have to sleep relatively the same amount of time. You know, like, is it Gauguin, the artist Gauguin? He became a full-time artist when he had a career as a stockbroker and was married with two kids. Like, I can't even imagine what that's like.
Well, in 15 minutes a day is what launched my most creative, prolific output ever. Back in 2011, I made a commitment to making art just 15 minutes a day. I could go beyond that if I wanted, but my minimum commitment for 1 month was 15 minutes, and that turned into over 150 pieces that year. So really, you know, it's just the commitment to make some, I encourage people to make their commitment a ridiculously achievable one, whether it's 15 minutes or 250 words or filling in a 3x5 card, whatever, something so that you're making movement forward. If you do that, you know, nothing will stop you.
Well, it's, again, I'm thinking about William Carlos Williams, you know, one of the great poets of the 20th century, wrote lots of these really quite short poems. And apparently one of the reasons for that is that it was about the size of the notepad, the doctor's notepad on his desk. And he would write these things in between patients.
That's great.
I think that's pretty cool, you know, that it was just the form following the function of the doctor's pad.
Fantastic. Well, boy, we have touched on a lot of great little gems here and really wonderful tips for creativity and producing your creative, whatever your creative expression is. It's been so great to talk to you, Mark. I'm just delighted to get a chance to hang with you today.
Well, my pleasure. Likewise, the two of you, you're both doing amazing stuff. It's always good to see what you're putting out there in the world. So it's very nice to be along here for part of the ride.
Well, thanks for joining us. And where can people find you, Mark?
Lateralaction.com is my creativity and coaching site. And if anyone's interested in my poetry and my thoughts on poets and poetry, it's markmcginnis.com. And that's
perfect.
McGinnis with double N, E-double-S.
And we'll put that on the page for the podcast as well, on the show notes.
Great. Yep. Mark, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Well, that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with me and Mark McGinnis and Corey Huff. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends. And hop on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you haven't already done so. Those reviews mean so much to me, and they also help other people find the show. If you need step-by-step instructions, because I know iTunes does not make it super intuitive, you can find them at livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. That's livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. That's it. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and go get creating.
Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.